You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to Stage Door Podcast, the podcast celebrating theatre and creativity, from onstage mishaps to career-defining moments.
Hosted by thespians myself, Tori, and co-host Eliza, fortnightly we will bring you industry professional guests, deep dives, and more. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Stage Door Podcast. Today, we have the fabulous Ava Madden joining us. But before we dive into today's episode, I would like to acknowledge that I am on Gadigal land.
And I'm on Turrbal land, the traditional custodians of the land on which we work, live, and record. And we recognise that sovereignty was never ceded.
Ava is an actor and singer graduating from Lasalle College of the Arts in Singapore. She was most recently seen in Sport for Job's Macbeth and The Lucky Country at the Hayes Theatre Company. Earlier this year, she played Cinderella in Into the Woods at Belvoir Street Theatre.
Her other recent stage credits include Titanic, the musical in concert with the Morello Project, Othello, Sport for Jove, Bells Are Ringing with Neglected Musicals, KT/Meg in Merrily We Roll Along with Hayes Theatre Company, and Cinderella in Into the Woods with Watch This, for which she was nominated for a 2022 Green Room Award. Please welcome to the mic, Ava.
Hello. Hi, everyone. I'm also recording on Gadigal land, and I'm very happy to be here.
We're so excited to have you on to talk about Venus and Adonis today, which is going to be happening very, very, very soon. But before we jump into talking about this exciting new show, we're going to start today by asking, what have you been listening to recently?
Listening to? Okay. I have gone on like a mild obsession with Meg Mack, who's a beautiful Australian artist. My sister opened for her on her tour kind of semi-recently, and my partner was playing drums for my sister. And ever since, like, watching her live, I've just gone into this, like, massive deep dive on Meg Mack, and I've, yeah, just become obsessed.
That is so cool.
I've never heard of her.
She's excellent.
Neither. I'm going to have to check it out.
She's excellent.
What kind of vibe is it?
Okay, I'm really bad at like genres. God, this is. But like, she kind of reminds me of Adele. I don't like. Yeah, it's quite epic and like. I don't know. Yeah, it's just gorgeous. Check it out. Yeah.
That's awesome. We'll have to check it out. So you are obviously in this new play called Venus and Adonis. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about the play itself and what it's about?
Totally. Yeah. So a lot of you may know the title Venus and Adonis, if you do know it. It's the title of a poem by William Shakespeare. Of course, this play is not the poem. It's a new work by Damien Ryan. It's about two rival poets. It's about William Shakespeare and Amelia Lanyer. And Amelia Lanyer is, by comparison to William Shakespeare in particular, but really across history, is a name that's it's not particularly known, well known. She was the first female poet to be published in the English language. And she accomplished some incredible things over her career. In particular, she published this work of poems called Salve Deus Rex Judaeorum. God. Hopefully I pronounced that correctly. That
was it's a mouthful.
Latin. As we say in the play, Latin always tells. but it was a feminist masterpiece. I mean, at a time when women weren't even writing, majority of women weren't even educated on how to read, let alone write. And of course, there were no female poets published at the time. There were not a single female poet in the English language. And she was writing these incredible feminist works. And she ensured they were published. Incredibly brave. And so yes, our play is about I've gone on a tangent on Amelia Lanyer, but the play does focus a lot on her. Yeah, she's incredible. The play is about William Shakespeare's life. It's It's a modern play. It's not a Shakespearean play. It is a modern play. It's just Shakespeare is one of the characters in our play. And what it does is it expands beyond the idea of who the person who wrote the words. We hear a lot about the man who wrote the words, but yeah, he didn't write in isolation. He was influenced by the people and the events that surrounded him. And our play focuses around three incredibly influential women that surrounded him, primarily Amelia Lanya, but of course also his wife, Agnes Hathaway, commonly known as Anne Hathaway, and Queen Elizabeth I, which they all influenced him in so many ways. We also focus around the events in his life that influenced him, particularly the death of his son as well. His son's name was Hamnet, who many conjecture influenced the play Hamlet, which he wrote soon after his son's death. It's funny, it's a comedy, it's also a tragedy, it's a celebration of theatre, it's a beautiful modern play, and it's not really about Shakespeare, it's about these, it's about feminism, it's about love, and it's about theatre, it's about the creation of theatre, it's a beautiful, beautiful piece.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds amazing. I'm sorry, I did not get to see, because I know that it was a film, maybe last year in 2022. So we did not get to see that, unfortunately, but I'm so excited to actually get to see it live on stage. It sounds so phenomenal.
It is. Yeah. And the film, yeah, I think it was slightly earlier than that. I, funnily enough, I haven't seen it either. And I kind of purposefully haven't seen it because I didn't want to be influenced by it. I wasn't in the film. Yeah. The majority of the cast are returning from the film. Myself and one other cast member are new additions.
Oh, that's really cool to be like with the original film at it, because it's the first, obviously that's kind of the first interpretation of the play, and then to have them come back and have time to sit with that piece and then find new things, that's really cool.
Totally. And we're actually using some clips from the film in projection through the course of the play, so it's become this beautiful amalgamation of it. It was, when the play was written, when Damien wrote the play, it was meant for the stage, but because of COVID they turned it into a movie, and the film did incredibly.
Yeah,
that's epic.
Oh, it's so exciting, and obviously it's coming up soon. You would have had previews not last night, the night before.
Last night as well. Yeah, the night before and last night. Yeah, we've had our first two previews now. It's been incredible to get an audience, and God, it just changes everything. But yeah.
Yeah. It makes such a difference to, I think, so many aspects of a show once you actually have an audience, because audiences react to different things and you get to play off of the audience as well. But obviously, talking about the show, we don't actually know what role you play in the show. So who are you within Venus and Adonis?
Well, primarily I play a few different roles, but primarily I play Susanna Shakespeare, who is Shakespeare's oldest child, his oldest daughter. But I also play courtier, and another member of the company, the milliner of the company. And when we started rehearsals, neither of my characters had names, but they now do, because Damien gave me full creative license over the name, and in creative style, my milliner's name is now Millicent, and my courtier's name is Courtney Ear.
I love that so much. That is so cool.
That's your own little stamp on it too.
That's it. No, it never gets mentioned in the play, but like, you know, anyone watching this video, you've got the inside scoop.
Exactly. Down the line, they're doing all the research and they're like, oh, this is actually what the names are called. Oh, that's fantastic. And I guess, what has the rehearsal process been like for you working on this new show?
I love working with Sport for Jove. I love working with Damien as a director. He's very collaborative. And yeah, because it's a new work, I think there's so much more collaboration that can happen as well. It was very short. We had 2 weeks to rehearse. And yeah, incredibly short for a new work. It's incredibly short for any play, but let alone a new work. So we didn't even have time for a table read. Like, often you'll start rehearsals by sitting around a table as a whole cast and reading through the play. Didn't have time for that. We worked quickly. Often we'd sit and read the scene before we got up there and did it. So we'll sit around the table often just before we start working on a scene and talk about it and and the themes, ask questions if we don't understand things. I think Damien always says there's no stupid questions. I ask a lot of them, which probably stupid questions. Thankfully, I'm not ashamed of them. Anyway, I'll make sure we understand everything. Yeah, and then we just kind of get up on the floor and play. But it's been cool because it is very, a very collaborative process. We'll often have ideas or suggestions. We'll make offers and it'll turn into something else. There have been little rewrites all along the way. We've changed the order of the scenes as well. Like, there were quite a few changes that happened over the course of the run. Yeah, and it's really fun to be able to work with a piece that can be flexible in that way.
No, that sounds really interesting. It's cool that there's also, for those who have seen the film, there is something different to expect within the play when you come and watch it, because it has a couple of new rewrites and scenes changed and orders changed, which can change a lot. If you reorder a scene, it can, you know, the flow-on effect.
Yeah, and there are scenes in the play that weren't in the movie. Look, I haven't seen the movie, so I'm comment with a grain of salt. But from everybody who I know who has worked on the film, they comment that the play is it's so different. I think what people describe is that the movie is quite dark for a huge period of time. Our play is very funny. There's a lot of comedy in our play.
Yeah, I really like how there's this historical context to the play as well. I think that's really great to watch, but it's also like in modern language as well, which is, it's really cool because it's normally you think, oh, Shakespeare, you know, and you're thinking that time period and how they wrote works. You don't normally, like, it's not usually modern. So it's really cool to see a show that's telling the story, but it still is really like accessible to everyone, even if they're not very well versed in that kind of language.
Totally, totally. And I hope people aren't scared off by the idea that it's in somehow, some ways related to Shakespeare. Yeah, because as you said, it's really, it's not Shakespearean. It's a modern play. It references Shakespeare, and we have some, there are some of his sonnets, but not in a way that's intimidating or difficult to understand. You will understand every word. It is a modern play.
Yeah. No, it's so, I think it's so exciting. And I think it leads in such a new generation as well into, I guess, the world of Shakespeare without it being that scary thing that I think young people especially think is like this big scary thing that is Shakespeare when they go and see like Romeo or Juliet or something that they're unfamiliar with, because it is written in modern English rather than Shakespearean. But obviously, so you've done quite a lot of work with Sport for Jove before and with Shakespeare. What's your experience been like working on a play that is based around Shakespeare but wasn't actually written by Shakespeare?
Amazing. In short. But yeah, I guess just for the reasons we were talking about, like, it's accessibility. You spend a lot of time, well, I do, I mean, maybe not all actors do, when they're working on Shakespeare, trying to frame it in a modern context so that you in your brain are able to understand it, so that when you speak the words, hopefully you're translating that meaning to a modern audience as well. I think there is something very inherently modern about Shakespeare's writing. I think that's why it survived, because the themes are universal. God, that sounds like a school English teacher talking and telling you, Dad, these are universal themes. They really are. Every Sport for Jove production that I've worked on, they find a modernness to it. It's not set in that era. Shakespeare himself never set his plays in those eras. Even when Shakespeare was performing these histories, he wasn't setting them in the era in which they were written. They were always designed to be modern plays about universal themes, about themes that are timeless. So now to have a modern play where that translation is in a way done for us, and we certainly, there are quite a number of Shakespeare's sonnets that the characters speak through the course of the play. It focuses, a lot of the play focuses around his sonnets and his lovers. Amelia Lanya was considered to be his dark lady of his sonnets. So there are quite a few of his sonnets over the course of, so Shakespeare's mistress, which is, and also his male lover is also one of the characters in our as well. I've been sidetracked. God, I feel like I talk about one thing and I get sidetracked. No. I get sidetracked by it.
I love it because I really love how, like, it's also centered around women. Like, it's not, you know, like, I think that's really powerful to see a perspective, a historical perspective of what it was like for Amelia and for all those women, and it's a really unique perspective that we don't get to see as often. Normally, I mean, all of Shakespeare's plays are usually centered around a man, so it's cool to see a different. I mean, it's not written by Shakespeare, obviously, but to see it around the women and even the women around his life and that were successful in their own right but didn't get that accolade at that time as much as he did.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, yeah, there's in our play, Amelia has this beautiful speech where she's talking to, in this scene, she's talking to Shakespeare about how he publishes her in his plays. I mean, it's got to be true. I mean, if not Amelia, if he wasn't publishing necessarily Amelia Lanier, of course he was publishing the people around him. He was influenced massively by the people around him. He didn't exist in a vacuum. So it's fantastic that we get to see those relationships unfold on stage.
Yeah,
exactly.
I feel like it would be so easy, I feel, to fall into the trap of when writing a play, a historical play based around Shakespeare, it'd be so easy to fall into the trap of making it so focused on him. So it's really good and exciting to hear that it's not, like, obviously it's a story that starts with him, but it is ultimately about the women and the different people around him that influenced him as a writer, which is so exciting to get to see.
Yeah, and I guess kind of on that, this is kind of leading into our game a little bit, but you've done your fair share of works like this and also Shakespearean works. Are you a Shakespeare buff yourself? And if so, what is your favourite one of his works?
God, a Shakespeare buff. I don't know if I can claim to be a Shakespeare buff. There are many people out there that know a lot more than me. I can't say that I've probably even read half his plays, but I do like Shakespeare. I really like performing Shakespeare, and God, I should read some more of it and watch some more of it, actually, more to the point. My favourite is Macbeth, from the ones that I have read and watched. I've actually, luckily enough, been able to perform Macbeth twice now, but it was my favourite even before I'd performed it. It's been my favourite since high school. I don't know why. I love it.
I don't know about you, because I also love Macbeth, but I think I love it so much because I love seeing a powerful woman in it. I think that's something, you know, with Lady Macbeth, and I think that's why it's so for so many, Macbeth is their favorite piece, because it that power dynamic and struggle, it's really cool.
Totally. I love their relationship. I think it's so, so interesting. And then when we performed it, I feel like I got a whole new perspective on it. We often, so often see Lady Macbeth portrayed as an evil woman who whispered in the ear of Macbeth and made him do awful things. And we kind of rarely see that they're a loving couple, that she's not evil. She's a woman who's actually lost a child. Women who lost children in that era were considered unworthy. A lot of them were called witches. And this is a woman who wanted to step up in the world when she felt that she had given nothing to her husband. So she thought, maybe I can give him the crown.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. It's so fascinating to me. I find it's a really interesting relationship dynamic. But I guess kind of on that, we thought it would be really fun because you've also done, you know, doing this play, but also you've done Shakespeare as well. We thought it would be really a great idea to do a bit of Shakespeare trivia with you.
Oh, no! No! All right, okay. Make me look bad on the internet. Let's do it.
It's multiple choice. It's multiple choice. It's fine.
I'm so glad I didn't claim I was a Shakespeare buff.
You're like, I rescind my previous statement.
I take it back. I take it back. Well, Tori, you take it away with the first question.
Okay. The first one. The first question, which I feel like if anyone's listened to Something Rotten, people would easily know the answer to this. But where was Shakespeare born? We have three options.
That should have fun, Abe.
I was like, I don't think I need to give you options for this. I think everyone knows what Shakespeare was for.
Yeah. Okay, nailed that one. Didn't even need it. Yeah, starting off easy. Okay, number two. What is Shakespeare's longest play with over 4,000 lines? Is it A, Romeo and Juliet, B, Hamlet, or C, Macbeth?
I'm going to guess B, Hamlet.
You are correct. Oh my goodness. Alva, you're killing this.
It was an educated guess, but yes. Just thought, God, that character talks a lot. God, Hamlet talks a lot. Surely it's going to be.
Surely he has the most words. Well, you have nothing to worry about. Look at you, killing it already. Two for two.
All right. Question three is, during Shakespeare's lifetime, what major disaster forced the closure of London theatres twice? Is it A, plagues, B, fires, or C, famine?
A, plagues. And I know this because it's our play is very much set in amongst that time.
Yes.
So good. Oh my gosh, you're killing this. Okay. Number four. We've got two left, so you never know. We could go five for five. Ooh. So number four, Shakespeare wrote how many plays? Is it A, 45? B, 37, or C, 21.
Let's go with B.
Yes! You got it! You're like,
That was purely a lucky guess.
No, I was like, surely educated guess. No.
Okay, with the final question, can we get five for five? Which character stated that life is a tale told by an idiot? Is it A, Othello, B, Hamlet, or C, Macbeth?
I don't think it's Macbeth.
You
should surely know that if it is. So what were the options?
It is A, Othello, B, Hamlet, and C, Macbeth.
Oh, it's got to be B, Hamlet.
No!
Oh, it's Macbeth, isn't it? Oh, no, it's Macbeth.
Yes!
Oh, no, it's Macbeth. It is Macbeth. I realised the second I said it. Life is a tale told by an idiot. Oh, God, I know the full quote as well. I was like, why do I know that? Probably because it was in the play I just did.
Oh, my God.
How embarrassing. You can cut that bit out.
We got four for four. What are you talking about? There was never a fifth question.
No.
There was never a fifth question.
When you were like, it's not Macbeth, surely not. I was like, yes, it is. Oh, so close.
And you wasn't Othello. And you couldn't be Othello. I was like, God, yes, of course it's Macbeth. Oh, God, how silly.
Hamlet always stuffs us up, doesn't it?
Well, jumping back into it, we want to know a little bit more about you, just as a performer. How did you get your start in acting and music theatre?
Oh, okay. So when I was young, I used to do theatre with a company called Marion Street Theatre. They're a fantastic little company. They still exist. They've been running for ages. They do plays for young people, but that are performed also by young people. So you perform for like ages 5 to 8 maybe, and you could start working from when you're about 10. And you'd put on these shows like, I don't know, like Beauty and the Beast or I don't know, Hansel and Gretel or like generally like fairy tale stories and that have been rewritten by, they have quite a few authors that write for them. Yeah, and it was fantastic because I learned a lot about theatre. Not only can you perform in those plays, you go to auditions and you audition for them, but it's a fun day. But you can also like do stage management with them. I was in ASM once or twice with them, and you just learn a lot about theatre and how it runs. It's it's pretty incredible. I did that when I was really young, and I kind of dropped off the bandwagon a little bit with theatre. I think I always knew I wanted to do something in performing. Wasn't too sure what. I didn't do a lot of amateur theatre kind of after that growing up. I always studied it in school, but I kind of got to my later years of high school. I guess I came back to it late in life. I think most people that ended up going into music theatre or theatre have been kind of doing amateur shows all through high school, and I never did any of that. Yeah, I knew that I liked singing And I kind of had a background in acting from doing stuff at Marion Street. I thought, okay, maybe let's do musical theatre. And I think it was just the combination of singing and acting that drew me to it, and then I sort of fell in love with it. But I really didn't know what I was doing when I first came into it. It took me a little while to get into drama school, and I felt like I was a little bit on the back foot, like I didn't really know a lot about musical theatre. And then once I graduated, it actually took me quite a while to start working as well. I lived in Singapore. I studied in Singapore, and when I graduated there, I worked in Singapore. But when I came back to Australia, it was really hard to get a foot into the industry. I took part in something called the AOC initiative, which was kind of an initiative that sprung out of a Rob Guest endowment, picking recipients that were primarily white, or picking all finalists that were primarily white. And the AOC initiative was formed by Tarek Frimpong, I hope I pronounced his name correctly, it was for performance of colour. I kind of nervously submitted a tape to them. And as a result, I think a lot of people in the industry who would wind up being very influential to my career saw me perform for the first time. And I think I could kind of trace most of my start of my musical theatre career back to them. I think, oh God, that person cast me in this, and they would have seen my tape for that. So Watch This cast me in my first musical. I played Cinderella in their production Into the Woods. Dean Druberg was on the panel, and I think also helped organise the AOC initiative, so he would have seen me there. Yeah, and that was my start. And it's this industry is funny, because once you get a foothold, once you kind of do your first thing, Vidya Makin also, she got me to do the workshop of her new work, The Lucky Country, which ended up being performed at the Hayes. So yeah, once you kind of get your footy, then people start seeing you, then it kind of flows from there.
Yeah, it's really great that you've had it's cool to see your journey, and like everyone's journey into the industry is different. And I find the leap from study into profession can be a really tough time for a lot of people. And sometimes it is literally as simple as having an opportunity to like sing at, I don't know, an open mic night that someone seems to be there, or, you know, obviously things like the AOC initiative, which are just absolutely incredible. Yeah, it's really cool to see how your career can stem back from that one point and go from there, because once someone sees you and they're like, oh, why haven't we noticed this person? They're incredible. It starts snowballing, and then that effect on your career, and you'll start working more, which is really exciting, because I know there's probably people out there listening who are in that tricky place of not, you know, finishing study but not quite having landed their first professional job, and it can be a really hard point in your career.
Totally. I think if it's something that you enjoy, like, absolutely keep at it. I don't know anyone who has kept at it and not gotten cast in something eventually. I don't know a single person. And sometimes people discover that it's not for them, and that's totally fine, of course. Go do other things that make you happy, but if it is something that you want, I think you will get there. Like, there's something, it takes a while.
So you've worked both in straight acting and also musical theatre, and sometimes that can be quite separated. I find people either, you know, they go to drama school for acting or they go for musical theatre, and sometimes there's not this crossover. So if there's anyone out there listening and they want to do both, do you have any advice for them?
Yeah, totally. You can do both. You're right. There is often a divide. I find myself fighting against that divide on a regular basis and still continuing to. I often wonder why there is. I think there is a reputation. I don't know how musical theatre has gotten this reputation, because there are so many fabulous actors that perform in musicals. But musical theatre has gotten a reputation of being not about acting. If somewhere in the acting world or in the straight theatre world, I that rumour seems to have perpetuated itself. Of course, not among everybody, but I mean, you're an actor. If you do musicals, you're an actor, and you can do both if you want to. Yeah, I was very lucky, because I started working for Sport for Jove by I just had an open audition on their website. On their Facebook page, I think I saw it, and I submitted a tape, and the rest was history. But yeah, I think the biggest factor holding people back is maybe confidence. They feel, oh God, if I didn't study acting, then how will I ever compete against people that did study acting for 3 years? I just don't think that narrative is true. I think, we're actors. And yeah, if you want to do straight plays, if you love text, I love text. And yeah.
It's a bit mind-boggling that there is this divide. Because exactly like you say, like musical theatre, you act in it. So it's just like, what is the difference? There's no difference to whether you are, like, you've got a scene in a musical and a scene in a play, they're both on stage, or I know there's a bit of a difference sometimes with filming, but film acting, but not really. There's a little bit of differences and things that you can, techniques you can pick up and different things that you can learn, but yeah, it's interesting that there is sometimes this, you can only do one or the other, and a little gatekeepery. And I think it needs to change.
I agree, it needs to change. I studied musical theatre, but the more I kind of work, the more I go, I don't think that I want to do every musical out there. Sometimes I prefer doing straight plays. I like text, so I like certain musicals, but I don't like all musicals. And I don't think I knew that at the start of my career. So I think it's awful that people should be pigeonholed into one thing when we're constantly evolving people. And we're learning and changing. I have a lot to learn still, but I agree. It absolutely needs to change. Perhaps it's because there's so many actors, and we just have to pigeonhole ourselves in order to make sure the roles are divided out. I don't know.
Yeah, but there's opportunity. There's so much opportunity. And yeah, the only real difference between straight plays and theatre is obviously the amount of text within them. And I think the only thing that going the other way is that for music theatre, you have to have some semblance of an ability to sing, which is something that can always be trained as well. It's not always, I think. I would much rather see someone with a voice that maybe isn't the strongest, but has the ability to really act a role and make it their own, than someone that has the best voice ever, but watching them perform, you're like,
there's nothing behind
it. So true. I often think that I'm the weakest singer in the room. Often, like, I think acting is my biggest strength, but I find that has booked me jobs. It can book you jobs, and if it does, then why can't it book me jobs in acting as well?
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Well, we are coming close to the end of our interview today. We've got a couple more questions for you. One of which is, do you have a favorite spoiler-free moment from Venus and Adonis?
There are so many moments in this play that are my favorite. I don't think I have a specific one. But there is this scene between Nathaniel Field, who was a player in Shakespeare's Company, who plays women, and Amelia Lanya, who is, of course, a woman herself, and he has this speech about that William Shakespeare doesn't understand women. He's preaching to a woman about what women are and the difficulties that they face. I love that speech. And also another favorite moment probably is actually the poem. Throughout the course of our play, we talk about the performance of the poem Venus and Adonis in court. And when we finally reach the poem at the end of the play, we've learnt so much about these characters that it just becomes this incredible dynamic piece. You're reading between the lines because you know so much about the characters and their relationships to one another. And the metaphor of Venus and Adonis has just evolved. And yes, it's dynamic, it's exciting, it's tense, it's... Yeah, it's incredible. It's funny.
Ooh, that's beautiful. I really like how you get to see the whole thing, and then obviously what the play is based around is then brought back at the end, and then you can see all the layers that actually go into the writing, because sometimes a lot of people read a Shakespearean work or that kind of language, and it can be a little hard to understand where everything's coming from or the subtext behind it, unless it's performed, you know, reading it off the page versus the performance of it. So that's really beautiful that you get to bring it back full circle at the end. And I guess, well, this is actually now our last question for the podcast today, which is really, really sad, but you have already had some performances of this show, so you might be able to speak a bit more about this, but what impact do you hope this play will have on audiences?
I hope that they walk away knowing the name Emilia Lanya. She has undoubtedly had an influence over literary history and the history of feminism. And there is no reason why she is lesser known than her counterparts of the era. She's written a work which is a masterpiece, not only for her time, but through all of history. Yeah, so I hope they take that away. Also, I hope they just have a really good time. The play is like, it is a celebration of theatre, the play. And if you love theatre, you'll love this show. It's beautiful and nuanced. You'll laugh, you'll cry. It's a work of genius. You absolutely need to come. It's just, yeah, I couldn't work on a better play. I'm so very excited to be a part of this.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds so wonderful, and we are so, so excited to get to see this and for everybody else to get to see this. So for those wondering, this is going to be on, it's on at the Seymour Centre from the 29th of September to the 21st of October. And you can get tickets at seymourcentre.com/events/Venus and Adonis. So please make sure that you do organise to go and get yourself tickets to see such a fabulous piece of not only Shakespeare, but history, and more importantly, the people that influenced him that probably got him to a point where he might not have been without having these fantastic women and people and his company in his life to influence him and his work.
But before we go, I would love to hear a little bit of a bedtime story from you. So this is a little segment we do at the end of the podcast where you can share a story about a stage mishap, a costume malfunction, anything that's gone wrong in a play, musical, anything that you've done that's been either an embarrassing moment or just a funny moment.
I'm laughing because I have so many embarrassing stage moments, but I'll share one that is is recent. It was thankfully not in a play. It was in a symposium. So it was like a lecture for schools where we perform little sections of the play. So we were doing a symposium on Othello, and I was doing a scene as the character Bianca. In this scene, she's trying to get her lover, this man who she's sleeping with, to come back to his lodging with her, and he's trying to shake her off. And at the end of the scene, she kind of leaves and she says, "'Tis very good, I must be circumstanced," which means circumstances must be right for you to have me be with you or to be with each other. And as I was, it's the very last line she says before she leaves the stage. And I say, "'Tis very good." And then my brain malfunctions and I say, "I must be circumcised." And I leave the stage. No!
I bet the school kids absolutely loved that so much.
Absolutely cacked it. The whole room cacked it. I was on the floor. I just was like I realized obviously immediately when I said the word circumcised, I was like, circumcised.
Oh my God, that is iconic.
I had to think about it just then when I was telling you the actual line. I was like, don't say circumcised again. Don't say circumcised again.
Oh, that is amazing. Oh, they would have loved that. They would have loved that so much.
They're like, ooh, chicken.
Oh, amazing. Well, thank you so much, Arba, for coming on and talking to us today about Venus and Adonis. It has been an absolute treat. And again, you guys, please make sure that you go and you purchase your tickets. We'll put all the details down in the episode description as well as on our Instagram. But thank you so much. We are so excited to see this. So excited to see you in this. It's going to be so, so wonderful. But anyway, you guys, that brings our episode to the end for today. So until next time, stay happy, healthy, and safe, and we will see you then.
Bye.
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 Have you ever wondered how your favorite performer actually feels? Well, here's your chance. Welcome to The Quiet Part Out Loud with me, Bobby Steggert, Broadway actor, and now a therapist to a whole host of Broadway creatives. Part interview, part therapy, this is not your typical podcast. We'll go right to the heart of things with some of your favorite artists, what they still struggle with, what lessons they've learned, what they haven't figured out yet. There's enormous power in saying the quiet part out loud. Are you listening?
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.